Welcome to Let's Talk, brought to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service. Catch all the hard-hitting news and current affairs that focuses on all relevant First Nations issues from a First Nations standpoint. This is Bo Spearham with Let's Talk.
Yama, I'm Bo Spearham, Gamilaroi Kuma and Murawari, and welcome to Let's Talk. I'd like to acknowledge the country on which we are broadcasting from and also to. I'd also like to pay my respects to our elders and also to our young people and everybody around the continent that is tuning in via the National Indigenous Radio Service, NIRS, or listening via our website, 989fm.com.au. On the program today, Don Dale Youth Detention Centre has seen an increase in young people being admitted to the facility, with a vast majority considered high recidivism or at risk of. There are many contributing factors to recidivism. One is the limitations of support for young people outside of court-focused case management and throughout, and also care model, which run between weekends from 9 a.m. to 5 days. Sorry, weekdays. Of the support, only a fraction are led by local Aboriginal initiatives or operate outside the usual business hours. Are young people transitioning back to poverty, low-income housing households with minimal support is a large contributing factor in why young people struggle to transition. On the program today, I yarn with the founder of Brother to Brother, or B2A, which is born out of the need for local Aboriginal-led initiatives that think outside of the box to address complex needs and circumstances. A safe healing centre service boasted by a team of leading local community role models. The B2A service will engage with young people in various settings, including in the community, within watch houses as part of the register of support person services, with also with youth detention through joining in on activities in partnership with stats and external activities provided. This morning I'm having a chat with a deadly brother, Jay, who is the founder of B2A, Brother to Another service up there in Darwin. And we start off the program. I ask him his mob and his country.
So from my dad's side, I'm a Koongarrigan and Bardi man, and born in Darwin on Larrakia country. At on my mum's side, I'm a Burragam and also Gadawa man.
Deadly. Thanks, brother. One of the reasons why we got you on is because our CEO here, Jai, who shares the same name with you, pointed us in your direction. You're doing some amazing things supporting some of the young fellas up there in Darwin. And some of those things that you are doing is based around youth support, mentoring, working with young kids who come in contact with the justice system. And as we know, and I'm hoping my listeners are well aware of, because I continue to raise this as an issue, is the new youth bail laws in the NT. They're trying to pass them here. I think they've passed them here in Queensland.
Yeah.
And there's a whole host of issues, you know, in and around sort of the youth justice that I'd love to chat to you about. But first off, brother, you have an organization up there called Brother to Another, or B2A. Could you tell us a bit about that organization?
Yeah, so Brother to Another is an Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander led and founded non-for-profit organization. So it actually began as a voluntary program a few years ago. I was running a youth hub up here in Darwin, and a lot of the young fellas that would come to the youth hub often. We're actually also going into Don Dale Youth Detention Centre quite a bit, and I just really wanted to sort of provide a bit more of a linkage and I guess kind of see them at different stages as well, because we saw the safety that we could bring whilst in the youth hub. So I was going in on Wednesday nights into Don Dale voluntary with a backpack full of different activities. So we had about 7 or 8 different activities, and we really wanted the young fellas in there to really guide what they wanted out of the activities. And we kept doing that for a while, and slowly, you know, started talking to them and asking them, you know, what do you want out of a program or support? What do you want to call it? So we actually had a brainstorming session in B block in Don Dale. It's about 4 different blocks, and they came up with Brother to Another as the name of the program that they wanted, and we kept kind of just looking at what they really needed, and they kept saying, like, we don't really have that many blackfellow orgs that come in and support us and continue that support. So that's what sort of lit the fire in me a few years ago. It took a few years of sort of, you know, I worked for the Northern Territory Government within youth detention for a little while to get a better understanding. And then this year, me and a couple of other local followers were ready to take the jump to really get organised and really support these young mob who are going through that recidivist cycle, who are kind of stuck in it, which is about... And I know sort of government figures might change a bit, but, you know, I really saw the carousel of young people coming into Don Dale, leaving and coming back in, and it was really, really high.
Mm. Oh, very concerning and scary, I guess, as well, for somebody like yourself who, you know, possibly... What was it like for you at a young age as well? Did you get into trouble, or were you sort of, you know, guided down the right path? And, you know, you're obviously at a stage now where you're very concerned for a lot of young fellas who, you know, we would have been or could have been if it wasn't for sort of some of the programs that you were now running.
Yeah, I think for me with my journey... Yeah, I was probably quite lucky and fortunate in my younger years. I actually spent quite a few years in Townsville as well as Darwin, and I probably didn't really start struggling until my later teens and early 20s, which is another aspect of Brother to Another, where, you know, we're looking to extend where our support is. But I also remember being in school and in Townsville, and that was around the same time as all the stuff happened in Palm Island with the watch house and the passing there. And I remember going into class and the kids and the teachers were talking about why would you build anything on an Aboriginal community? They'll just burn it down. And I remember getting quite frustrated as one of the only Aboriginal kids in that class. And then as soon as I was frustrated, I was that angry little black kid. So I think that's when I started kind of realising that there's something quite political and, I guess, dysfunctional with those systems, the justice system and the policing. I think Townsville kind of really woke my eyes up to that as well.
Oh, definitely, brother. I remember when that happened as well, and I literally remember sitting in class and teachers as well sort of jumping in and asking, you know, one, you become the expert, but then also two, you're berated, you know, with comments like that. You know, I remember massive, you know, rallies here in Brisbane as well. Brother, just sort of continuing on as well, a big thing that's been happening and mob have been advocating for in different sort of various spaces, whether that's, you know, the legal professions to sort of academia to sort of on the streets with protesting, and also programs like yourself. There's the Raise the Age campaign. You know, Australia still locks up 10-year-olds. I'd love to get your thoughts on that, brother, and do we need to sort of change this as well and sort of radically think how we sort of engage with young people?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the biggest, I guess, stories with the, you know, I guess I seeing kids that young in youth detention. I remember would have been about 4 or 5 years ago. I was on a national youth detention project, and we're actually up at Cleveland Youth Detention Center in Townsville. And I remember in one of the blocks there was a really, really young fella in one of the blocks on the phone talking to his mum, and he would have only been about 11. He was tiny. And he said, "Mum, you know, like I made a friend in here." And he kind of skips talking to his mum about this friend he made. And he actually said, "Oh, can this friend sleep over tonight?" And so it was actually so confronting, because this young fella really didn't realise that he was locked up in there and stuck. And that just shows you, yeah, when they're that young and what they can comprehend or can't in that sort of that trauma state. That was really confronting, seeing a kid ask his mum if someone can sleep over, thinking he'd be back at home that night. Another thing with the under 14s is that I guess it's really looking at where are our programs for young people and families to really support families with these young fellas and after hours and weekends, and where are our community-led solutions? Because there's a lot of community-led solutions, but how's the funding being pushed into the local mob who are being supportive? So I guess it's the other thing with youth who are sort of under 14 as well, and particularly in the context of the Northern Territory, is that depending on which remote communities they're from, or even some of the more urban centres, around that 14-year-old age sometimes is when different groups will start going through their ceremony and their transitions and stuff like that. So a lot of young people miss out on a lot of their cultural obligations into becoming a man as well, which has a huge, huge impact. Also with the schools aren't really designed in these detention centres to support young people through their learning, and particularly if you're a 12, 13-year-old who's coming into this mainstream school and you're coming from a remote community where English is your fourth or fifth language, you're getting told that you're dumb and you don't understand from a really early age. So it really sets this precedence in such a young mind that they don't really belong in both the Western system, but also even in their communities and in a cultural way as well. If you've got 11-year-olds around 17-year-olds who have been unfortunately conditioned by the system, they sit in the blocks learning in that way as well. So, it's hugely damaging. And I'd love to see a lot more youth hubs and support houses, even similar to kind of like the Lighthouse project in Townsville, where it's sort of like a 24/7 house for youth as well. It's really looking at, I guess, how can we as community support this and really advocate for that change?
Definitely, brother. I'd love to ask some of the programs that he's running, how he's engaged young fellas as well. But first, before I do that there, I want to play some audio that I grabbed earlier this year. The audio is from earlier this year. It's from an ABC interview, and it's regarding mob actually rallying and protesting against the announcement of this bill back in May of this year. I want to play this audio, get your reaction, and then we'll go on and have a yarn about some of the programs. But first, I'll just play this audio that I grabbed from the ABC in regards to the NT youth bail laws reform.
When children are incarcerated in the way that they are here in this country, it doesn't help them. It doesn't help their families. It doesn't help the victims of crime.
We completely understand that there are people out there that are having houses broken into and all of that kind of stuff. We understand that, and we don't want that either. But being tough on crime doesn't help the situation. Youth diversion programs help the situation.
The draft laws have just entered Parliament and include automatic revoking of youth bail for certain breaches and extra provisions for electronic monitoring. The protesters and other observers say there's no evidence to support the laws and their role in making the community safer.
The most recent research from America actually says that they will commit, 33% of the children will commit more serious offences when they come out.
During the day, the Territory Government took a lesson from police about how to promote youth diversion and alternatives to detention while still being tough on crime.
Many of these kids are not able to get away from the environment which has driven them into a pathway of criminality, and that's something that we genuinely believe these reforms will change. Diversion will greatly assist in ensuring they get back onto the right path.
These reforms do not diminish the NTIG's government's commitment to the Royal Commission. They address and target a small number of high-volume repeat offenders.
Oh, brother, I'd just love, just to sort of get your reaction in regards to that audio. You know, obviously we heard from some mob who had high concerns about this, and then also from police who were sort of, and politicians who were very, very supportive of this. Didn't necessarily sound like they were, you know, more so for the diversionary, like they really wanted to sort of roll this out as well.
Look, I think the massive issue that I see and a lot of community see, and it's obvious for us, but unfortunately not so much for others, is that we've got to really stop criminalising our youth and criminalising Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. And you know, you even hear it in the way the narrative is, even in that clip, was driving youth to criminal activities. I think one of the statements that was made in that clip by one of the police, and really it's not about looking at criminogenics. It's looking at we really need to be looking at social, emotional, and cultural well-being. And the strengths of our community and our young people with their identity and culture. And this is where, you know, the bail laws and, you know, the new reforms don't actually cater for those core issues of, you know, just strengthening, using the strengths of our community, using the strengths of our aunties and uncles and the parents and the grandmothers and the grandfathers and our kinship systems. It really doesn't look at that when we have government responses. Another issue is that if we're going to push more diversionary programs, then how is government procuring in a different way to allow for more community, initiative to push through? Because we all know that, you know, trying to even get funding as an Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander group or organisation is quite difficult and quite tedious. Yet we're getting these really massive NGOs who are obtaining that big funding. So if they're going to push all this money into more police resourcing and diversionary, we're kind of getting, it's almost like more white hands in the pie of funds and not more community-led solutions. The detention centres weren't even prepared to take in more young people once these laws were, passed, and quickly passed they were too. And the issue too is that, you know, just like in other jurisdictions, Northern Territory wanted to build a new detention centre, and the scary thing is that you build more beds, and you build it, they'll come. So we don't want the detention centre to be full and then that trigger a response again to say, oh, well, we're overflowing at the detention centre, so we need to build a bigger and newer and sort of one to house more young people. So I feel like it's almost like that triggering along of what this, these bail laws can do. The other thing is that the diversionary programs are at full capacity. So we're changing these laws, yet where there's nowhere to refer young people. So they're inevitably going back into youth detention. And, it's right. It was one of those quotes in that clip as well, is that, it's it doesn't make the community safer. If there are people on the side of the fence that think that youth detention is the answer, well, it's actually not making the community safer. If you're a politician trying to win votes in that way by reducing a young person's social, emotional, and cultural well-being, you're actually not helping them and their families, and in turn, you're not helping the community. I really think that the bail laws haven't really looked into what are the core elements of helping young people have healthy lives.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, a big factor to sort of, you know, young fellas come in contact with the justice system, as we know from research, is one, you know, a lot of mob, you know, who come from, a lot of the young fellas who are inside obviously come from low socioeconomic communities. Mm-hmm. Some of them have learning difficulties and some other sort of needs that need to be sort of wholly addressed, and then, you know, are they, once they get sort of stuck into the system, it's sort of like a revolving door as well. In line with the work that you do, brother, I know when I was chatting to you briefly over the phone yesterday, you were doing it as a sort of a more voluntary sort of work, I guess, for the love of the community. Now you're sort of shifting into sort of, you know, doing it permanent and having an organization sort of run in and do these programs. What are some of the work that you will be doing with these kids? And another question that I wanted to ask as well is, when we talk about young people in lockup, we tend to sort of look at the idea that young fellas, when we think of young fellas as a teenager, we don't necessarily think of anybody older as well. And I saw in some of your programs, you're running and working with kids as old as sort of into their 20s.
Yeah. So, look, we're just so passionate about really trying to make this change and really be something that's a bit different in, I guess, this youth justice landscape up here in Darwin. So our youth justice pillar, for which we work within Brother to Another, we kind of have certain elements in which we work, and so that's in community with the young people and families, which includes a priority on after hours and weekends. We also will go into the watch houses to be and jump on. There's a program up here called the Register of Appropriate Support Persons, where we can support any young fellas that are in the watch house who don't have a guardian present. And then we'll actually work with the detention centres so that we can support some young people with their transitions in and out. And work with those case teams as well. So we really look at that holistic view of how we engage and just trying to break that that cycle in whatever time it may take, just through improving their social, emotional, and cultural well-being. A huge part of that is, we've been really lucky. We've had a bit of work done with the Melbourne School of Business and with Good Data Institute, looking at how we fix up our data sets, and we collect data that sort of in a way that no one else is really collecting, and sharing that with community as well. And one of the big things is that as soon as young people are about to turn 18, they kind of the government and a lot of services kind of wash their hands with them and sort of say, yep, that's it. Like, we're not doing any more. And there's not too many crossover programs out there. I've seen young people who have been in Dondale for a year or two, turned 18, spent being released and spent about 2 months in community, then with minimal support, and then ending up in Holtz, which is the adult jail, and sort of seeing how shaken up they were and kind of lost, and then seeing those same young people then stuck in the same cycle within the adult jail system. So we support young people at least up to 21, 22. We also say that when you're engaged with us, that we sort of actively will stick by the those fellows at least for 2 to 3 years. That allows us to really look at what change can be made. But we're really passionate about, you know, having these young fellows on board when they're in their 18s and 19s as well. We're finding a lot of some of the young fellows are actually becoming fathers during those early years. So how can we support them through that cycle and in turn really supporting you know, that bub, having some parents who are healthy in that way as well. And I guess a lot of the things we aim to do is just give the tools and resources to those young fellows and those families and let them self-determine what they need as well. A big part of what we do is that we've got mentor agreements where the young people and the families actually tell us what they need, and we are guided by what they're telling us that they need and want as well, in line with what their social, emotional, cultural well-being may look like. And we're developing a community panel, and those mentor agreements will actually discuss that with the panel, and the panel can then put pressure is probably the wrong word, but it could be pressure, but and we want that panel to be from local Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander leaders and families and organizations to basically put the onus on us. Are we actually doing what we say we're going to do? We don't want to be, you know, as a community org where, you know, like we answer to what the community wants as well. And so we needed a function that could ensure that they had an avenue to guide what we needed to do. And supporting these young fellas into their early 20s is a huge part, a huge part. A lot of the times if you've got a young person coming out of youth detention after 6 years and turning 18, it's such a huge change. And, you know, there's a big period of time there where it's just letting them adapt and I guess like relax into, you know, having, I guess, being 18 and having even more options sort of at your disposal as well. But also realizing that, you know, we need to get a job or education or go into the next stage or phase of life. But we're not supposed to all have the answers at that time. And a lot of the programs that come in for some youth, they sort of say, you know, you need to know what you're doing, what career you want. And the thing is that we've got no idea. I know for myself, I had no idea what I wanted to be at that age. So we really have a time of grace where we just really look to build their identity and give them that opportunity to even be peer mentors as well, and create those opportunities. Another big aspect of Brother to Another is our workforce development. You know, we want to create opportunities for more local Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander men to come into the communities and sort of health spaces and work with these young fellas or just be in that sort of area instead of just being in trades. I got told as a young Aboriginal fellow that I'd only be good at footy and trades, and, you know, I wasn't that good at footy, and, you know, I wasn't too good at trades, but I did the trades and tried my heart out at, you know, playing sport as well. And it probably wasn't until, you know, my mid-20s where I really sort of got into this space more. But I've seen the power of being an Aboriginal man in the space and how we can connect. And so we're trying to really build that workforce and get more people into that, particularly if we do have, or when we do have these 20-year-old fellas wanting to look up to what mentors they need. We can be there with them.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like you're doing some amazing work there, brother. And, you know, I'm a firm believer in, like, it's okay not to know what you want to be. At, you know, especially at a young age, I'm like yourself, brother. You know, I did a whole bunch of sort of other work and never really thought too much of it, or thought that, you know, this is for me, until I found radio and community work and stuff. And you know, I try my best to combine those two things together. And, yeah, you know, I'm very thankful that, you know, I found some of that spot here at the radio station as well, and have been doing it for a while. And, you know, it's all, I tell young followers as well, like, it's all right, you know, not to know, but be prepared to sort of you know, do the hard work and get their hands dirty and learn some skills that may be relevant to sort of where you want to be, or even if it's not, you know, at least it'll put you into a place where you're used to, you know, the daily grind of that routine of getting up, going to work, going home and doing it again as well. I think that's so important for our young fellas to look at and to engage in as well.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And like, I think within this work, when you're with this connection with these, you know, the young fellas that, yeah, as the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, where, you know, this isn't a 9-to-5 job, and, you know, this affects all of our families. And, you know, when you're sitting in those block cells in, you know, whether it be in Don Dallas, Springs, Townsville, Brisbane, Victoria, you know, you see these. Just these absolute sparks of vibrancy, and how smart some of these young fellas and the girls are as well. And you just, you know, you see these, just how intelligent and expressionate they are. And you see them within four walls, and you see their vibrancy, but they're not in a an environment to really showcase that vibrancy or really explore it. And it's you know, it's something that drives me to. And the fellas that are on board with us to really keep this connection with these young mob and really get that vibrancy in who they are out. Like the amount of times where we've been on the keyboard in Don Dale or writing lyrics or just talking about life and having a laugh, and you see that, you know, I'd really, I always talk to people who are on the fence of, you know, putting locking them up and throwing out a key, but saying, like, look at this vibrancy, like, look at the amazing intellect and strength that these young people have. They're living in survival mode, and you know, there's so many good ways through safe relationships how we can direct their lives, and they can change their lives. And another part of what we do is we've got expression sessions, so we've got rappers on board and street artists, and we don't want to just be pumping out the normal reports or numbers. Like, we actually want to have the young people's words and expressions in our reports of what we talk about, and let the young people really guide what they need. I guess another limitation of what we have too is we're not working with any girls in detention at this point, and, you know, we'd really like to put a good evaluation on what we're doing and give that to a black fellow org that's better suited for that as well. But yeah, you're right, like, it's you know, these young fellas are getting told what they are, that they're bad, what they should be doing. They should be doing A, B, or C. But it's really, life is such a big journey, and it's really showing these young fellas that this is right at the start of it. Like, you know, I've just turned 30, and I'm still navigating my identity as well. And it's just being real and authentic with them as well. And that's what's really exciting for us, is that, you know, we're able to just play a small part in these young mob's journey. And yeah, we're just really excited for it. We're really lucky to have gotten some philanthropic funding, and hopefully we can get a little bit of funding from NT Gov just to solidify what we're doing. But yeah, it's about us being very real with these young fellas and saying, no, like, we were at the same age. We were angry. We struggled through our own issues as well. But you know, we've really popped out of the other side. But it's a, you know, we might make mistakes and fall down as well. But, you know, we accept you, and we'll keep, you know, engaging with you, and not just as another service, but as other, you know, as other black fellas with you.
Sounds like you're doing some amazing work, brother. I'd love to catch up with you in a couple of months, in 6 to 12 months, and just sort of see how things are going. Because I'm sure, you know, just listening to your brother, that, you know, he's already hit the ground running, and he's doing amazing things to sort of support, you know, not just young people, but community and families as well. My listeners, if you've enjoyed this program, I've been yarning to Brother Jai, who is the founder of Brother to Another. Bros, do you have a website? Like, can we check yous out on social media, you know, follow, support in any way as well?
Yep, so we're just getting our socials and website up, so it'll all be under Brother to Another, sort of AU. But yeah, with our funding, we're only sort of very early into that. So yeah, we'll have that set up really soon.
Deadly, brother. And thanks for yarning. And definitely thanks as well for, you know, doing the work that you do, putting the hard yards in, and really working with these young fellas as well, because, you know, it definitely is something that we do need to continue to do is support, you know, our young fellas, because they are the future and they are our future leaders. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that, you know, as you sort of mentioned, they may be future parents or parents at the moment as well. And, you know, all we need, and I think all we, you know, people like us, and, you know, we've been given a chance, and that's what we need to give these young fellas. And, you know, you're doing that as well.
No, appreciate your time today. And yeah, look, we're just super excited to really to start, yeah, just really working in close with these young fellas and just being there with them on this journey. And we're happy to share any information as we come through as well.
Deadly, thanks, Nat. Just really quickly for my listeners, if you've enjoyed this program, you can catch the podcast on our website at 989fm.com.au. As always, it's a pleasure. You've been listening to Let's Talk here on 98.9 FM, Murray Country.